Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 30th, 2019. The UN Security Council votes to renew the arms embargo on South Sudan for another year.
And this morning, we in the Council have demonstrated to the people of South Sudan that we are committed to bringing an end to their suffering. This council will not allow those who seek to undermine peace to do so with impunity, nor will we support the free flow of weapons into the country.
And a South Sudanese expert says the arms embargo comes at the right time.
The potential for violence still remains very high. The potential for political instability remains so high. And therefore, the international community is mandated to pursue this arms embargo.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Security Council voted in New York today to renew an arms embargo and sanctions against South Sudan for another year. The U.S.-drafted resolution passed the 15-member Security Council with 10 votes in favor and 5 countries abstained, including South Africa, Cote d'Ivoire, and Equatorial Guinea. Ambassador Jerry Matthews Magela of South Africa said his country abstained because they don't believe sanctions are helpful in ending the conflict in South Sudan, especially when the signed revitalized peace agreement is making progress slow but steady.
When there is a volatile political process on the table, it should be safeguarded and exempt from external pressure, which can aggravate the situation. Nevertheless, the process of making peace has never been, nor will it be ever, be an easy task, as it is not a linear process, but it has many layers to it. Lastly, like many delegations, including that of the U.S., we remain concerned with the precarious humanitarian situation that still prevails in South Sudan. We call on all parties to redouble their efforts towards improving the humanitarian situation and to protect all those in vulnerable situations.
U.S. Representative Jonathan Cohen insists the arms embargo changed the security situation in South Sudan. He adds, U.S. is ready to consider adjusting sanctions regime by either recommending additional measures to strengthen the sanctions or suspending measures depending on progress made in South Sudan.
It cannot be denied that some initial progress toward peace took place immediately following this council's action on sanctions 10 months ago. Mr. President, there are undoubtedly many factors besides a strengthened sanctions regime that contributed to that turn of events. Not least, we're encouraged that regional actors have taken more of a leadership role to encourage and support peace in South Sudan. We're counting on the region to maintain pressure on the parties to implement the peace agreement and to uphold the UN arms embargo to prevent the flow of weapons into South Sudan, which would further destabilize the country and the region.
German Representative Christoph Hagen agreed, adding South Sudan does not need any more weapons.
Germany thinks the money saved on weapons would be much better spent on improving the justice system so that the perpetrators commit sexual crimes they would brought to justice.
But the representatives from Cote d'Ivoire disagreed with the continuing arms embargo. Speaking through a translator, Ambassador Kaku Dija Leon Adam echoed those remarks, adding there has been progress on the political front.
The role of our council cannot simply be to continually impose sanctions. We must also be able to appreciate progress made and place our actions in a dynamic perspective. Our South Sudanese friends and brothers today more than ever need our united and constructive action. They need to be encouraged in their difficult quest for peace.
The representatives of Equatorial Guinea, Ngong Mba, the third African country that abstained from voting, said through a translator there are other solutions to stopping the conflict in South Sudan.
We support the sanctions to a certain extent or in some aspects, but we believe that there is a good time to impose them and the time when it is not appropriate. We need to give the political stakeholders in South Sudan an opportunity to continue in this dynamic of achieving peace through peaceful means and through dialogue.
Russia and China were the other two countries that abstained from voting. Both countries' representatives say they are uncertain if the embargo would yield any progress. But the UK representative, Stephen Hickey, said renewing the embargo sends a message to South Sudan.
And this morning, we in the Council have demonstrated to the people of South Sudan that we are committed to bringing an end to their suffering. This Council will not allow those who seek to undermine peace to do so with impunity. Nor will we support the free flow of weapons into the country whilst that peace remains so fragile.
The president of the council for May ended the meeting with an announcement that there is no plan B for South Sudan. A South Sudanese expert says arms embargo on South Sudan plays a key role in stopping the flow of weapons into the country and holding perpetrators of violence accountable. Ayen Deng Bior reports from Washington.
Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Washington-based Enough Project, says today's vote on the arms embargo comes at a time when political and security conditions in South Sudan remain unpredictable.
The international community still views South Sudan as a precarious political situation. So the fragility that is existent right now indicates that the potential for violence still remains very high. The potential for political instability remains so high, and therefore the international community is mandated to pursue this arms embargo to mitigate the potential for violence going forward.
The arms embargo on South Sudan was implemented almost 1 year ago today in mid-June. Adeba says even though there have been reports of potential violations this past year, he still believes the embargo plays a crucial role.
An arms embargo is only one of the means to contain conflict in South Sudan. It is not a solution, and the solution ultimately is a political one. So to say that the arms embargo can resolve the conflict in South Sudan is, of course, to miss the point. It is, however, an important action, and it shows that the international community is concerned. And, of course, as you know right now, of course, there is the peace agreement, which is the political part to resolve the conflict. So an arms embargo in and of itself cannot resolve anything, but it is nevertheless an important step in holding actors in the conflict accountable for their actions.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley, who lobbied for the implementation of the arms embargo, said during last year's vote that the Security Council needs to see the violence stop before it lifts the embargo. Critics of the embargo said it's not a silver bullet that will stop the conflict. Uganda has been criticized for fueling the conflict in South Sudan. In January, the Associated Press reported Ugandan forces briefly entered South Sudan's central Equatoria region, which is a possible violation of the UN arms embargo. Richard Karamayer, the country's military spokesman, defended the action, telling the AP that Ugandan forces entered under a bilateral understanding to protect a team of engineers fixing the Kayaye Road. During an event at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington last week, Ugandan ambassador to the U.S., Mul Katende, denied his country has had any involvement in South Sudan's conflict.
I want to inform you that the conflict in South Sudan is one of the most documented conflicts, because the parties have gone through peace processes, even signed agreements. Reports have been prepared, and nowhere do you find that one of the causes of your conflict is Uganda. Nowhere.
But Adeba says it is clear that Uganda does carry political influence with the government of South Sudan.
At this particular point, I think a rethink of the type of relationship that both countries have, especially when it regards violating arms embargoes, when it when it contributes to exacerbating the conflict dynamics in the country, then I think that it is not proper that these countries need to rethink that relationship. In fact, there is an African the peace agreement that has been signed right now calls for the withdrawal of all troops from South Sudan and calls on neighboring countries not to poke their noses into the conflict in South Sudan. And so with the backing of the UN Security Council and with this resolution, it reinforces this point again and again.
Adeba adds that the effectiveness of the embargo heavily depends on the ability to enforce it. Ayan Dangbior, VOA News, Washington.
Still on the matters to do with the arms embargo, a researcher at the U.S. Institute of Peace says he believes the three African countries that abstained from today's voting have a reason to do so. Ali Vaji says national interest plays a key role in today's votings.
Well, very clearly there's a signal coming from the region itself, from the IGAD region, and no IGAD country is publicly in favor of the arms embargo, and the African members of the Security Council tend to follow the regional organization's lead. That's one explanation. They all cited the ongoing progress in the peace process and the possibility of disrupting the mediation. But I think they ignored both the symbolic value and the practical value of the sanctions regime. First, in terms of symbolism, the idea that somehow a year after the embargo has been put in place, that everyone has performed well in South Sudan and all the parties have done and lived up to their commitments is clearly not the case. And while embargoes are not supposed to be punitive, there is an important symbolism in terms of telling the parties in South Sudan that lots more needs to be done. On the practical side, as the UN panel of experts reported quite recently, there is recent ammunition that was produced after the war started that has entered South Sudan, in addition to other potential more recent violations of the arms embargo. So while an embargo is not a magic solution, it certainly doesn't solve many of the problems, there is a practical value to having it in place if it means that there are fewer arms available to the combatants. And we should also point out that this applies to both sides. It's not only to the government, it's also to all of the other South Sudanese actors, whether they're signatories to the agreement or not.
In a previous conversation, we were talking about Equatorial Guinea, and the representative from that country said that they support the sanctions to a certain extent, but they believe that there's a good time to impose them and a not-so-appropriate time to impose them.
The Equatorial Guinean representative also made a very interesting comment. He said that arms embargoes disproportionately affect the government rather than the opposition, and so one of his concerns, or one of the country's concerns, is that you have this sort of regime and it affects one side more than the other. And timing is always a question with these things. And I think part of what we have to consider is that we're not establishing, or the council is not establishing, an arms embargo from scratch. It's already in place. So to discontinue it is also a question of what is the appropriate timing of that. You can't turn embargoes on and off that quickly. There are long-term implications to it, and as we've seen from some of the reports that have come out, there has not been full compliance with it either.
You know, it's been about a year since the arms embargo was implemented, and just looking back at this last year, can we say that the arms embargo has been effective?
Part of the problem with the embargo was that it took so long to put in place, and part of the question I think we need to ask about timing was, not was 2018 the right time, but was 2014 or 2015 the right time? So clearly by the time that an embargo was put in place by 2018, its effect was always going to be more limited. And this is part of why the focus on the embargo, to some extent, it obscures the bigger points that sanctions and embargoes are supposed to be tools. They're not supposed to be ends in themselves. There is an important mitigating factor if there's fewer arms and ammunition in South Sudan. I think that does help things. The compliance of the parties with the embargo very much depends on the neighboring countries. And the effectiveness of any embargo depends on the political will demonstrated by all of the countries involved as well.
That was Ali Vaji, researcher at the U.S. Institute of Peace here in Washington, speaking to my colleague Ayen Deng Bior. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenya's president calls on South Sudan leaders to end the cycle of violence in their country. We'll have more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite garment to wear on special or formal occasions?
I just put on what I feel like, what is smart for me and everything. Can put on anything which is good for me, for swag and everything.
When you put on a suit, at least you look better and the friends, and they also identify you that as an important person.
Lace we do. A colored one, maybe indigo or turquoise color, sewn in the form of a straight dress.
Now I'm into African wear, so I prefer wearing the African print to church, to work, on occasions.
Yeah, I like katanga, and of course I also like katanga because it makes me look nice and fit. At least I feel comfortable wherever I go.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is calling on South Sudanese leaders to work together towards ending the vicious cycle of violence in the country. Speaking during a prayer breakfast at the State House in Nairobi, President Kenyatta says his country stands ready to help the people of South Sudan achieve peace.
People of South Sudan desperately need peace in order for them to get service that they fought for many years. South Sudan, peace is possible, but there must be also the intention to have peace. Leadership is not about who is president, but it's about service. And Kenya stands ready, my brother, to work with you and all your colleagues to help the people of South Sudan.
President Salva Kiir told Kenyan leaders during the annual prayer breakfast meeting at the State House that his country is in conflict because of what he calls leadership struggle.
We are fighting up to now among ourselves. And what are we fighting for? Power. That I want to become the president. I want to become the president. And the result is that innocent lives have been lost.
President Kiir also visited former Kenyan President Daniel Arap Moi at his home in Kabarak. Family and friends of late Kenyan writer and gay rights activist Kenneth Bivanga Wainana held a memorial celebration in his life and works Thursday in Nairobi. Bivanga died last week in Kenya after a short illness. Rahel Ombur reports from Nairobi.
Family and friends of Binyavanga Wainaina, the Kenyan literary icon who challenged stereotypes and prejudice through his writings, held a ceremony Thursday to celebrate his life and work. The attendees streamed into the intimate garden event as the sound of soft instrumental African music played in the background. James Wainaina, Binyavanga's elder brother, spoke to VOA.
How I'd like people to remember Binyavanga, I think, would be encapsulated by just a very brief thought. Ken's life was a seed, and he planted that seed not for himself but for others, just listening to the number of artists who found their voice because Ken believed in them, gave them a platform to speak in so many different fields, be it musically, very many different types of artistic expression. That's how I'd like him to be remembered. And that's what life is about.
Binyavanga won the Kane Prize for African Writing in 2002. He also founded the Kwani Trust, a publisher that championed African literature by promoting new writing. Billy Kahora, a writer and editor at Kwani Trust, worked with Binyavanga.
I think his legacy is so big that to try and capture it like in a moment, you'd actually have to meet him. You'd have to meet him and kind of spend 5 minutes just to get a sense of what he is like. But I think the other ways to meet him is through his writing. I think because he had so many facets.
Kenyan artist Sitawa Namwalie read one of Binyavanga's most consequential essays, titled I Am Homosexual Mom, in which Binyavanga imagines what it would be like to come out to his late mother. A strong LGBTQ advocate, Binyavanga came out as gay through the essay in 2014 and revealed that he was HIV positive. For a conservative section of the society, being gay outweighed Binyavanga's life achievements, but Wainaina doesn't care.
The conversations, everyone has a right to speak. As far as I'm concerned, Ken was an amazing guy. I love him dearly, and nothing anyone says would make me change that.
Kwani Trust is now working on a project to immortalize some of Binyavanga's works.
Some of his work has been put together on a website called planetbinya.org, but I think like kind of formalizing this in a kind of formal reader, this is an idea we're kind of playing around with, and this is kind of a collaboration between friends, family, and we'll obviously be discussing this after to just come up with concrete plans.
Kenneth Binyavanga was 48 years old. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move back to South Sudan, where the United Nations Population Fund says thousands of women in South Sudan suffer from obstetric fistula. A reproductive health specialist says too many child marriages is to blame for the highest rate of fistula cases in the country. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Obstetric fistula is a hole between a woman's reproductive organ and rectum that is caused by prolonged obstructed labor, leaving a woman unable to control urine or feces. Dr. Samson Baba, special advisor to National Health Minister Riak Guy-Koch, says fistula is painful and humiliating for women.
A lady who suffers from this will be having leakage of urine and feces, and in most cases, she's also rejected by the community. And even husbands. And the communities normally shun them.
Dr. Baba says government hospitals have so far treated more than 1,000 patients suffering from obstetric fistula since 2011.
In 2015, 116 fistula cases were repaired in WOW Teaching Hospital. 2017, 123 were repaired in Yambio State Hospital, Awili State Hospital, and Juba Teaching Hospital. And in 2018, 141 were repaired in WOW, Mary Help, WOW Teaching Hospital, Awili State Hospital, Bentiu State Hospital, and Juba Lutheran Church. In 2019, 31 were repaired in WOW, St. Daniel Komboni Hospital, and Juba Lutheran Church.
Baba believes far more South Sudanese women and girls suffer from fistula than what is being reported, especially in rural communities. He says the government and aid agencies have been carrying out awareness campaigns since 2006 so that people understand the causes and symptoms of obstetric fistula. Siti Lina, a nurse in the gynecology ward at Juba Teaching Hospital, says the hospital has yet to register any cases of fistula this year. Speaking in Arabic, Lina says last year medical workers at the hospital treated young girls suffering from fistula as a result of rape, including a five-year-old girl who was raped in Yambu and rushed to Juba Teaching Hospital.
Okay, sen alfat this shahar arba and you cases of fistula kan arba cases.
Last year in April, we had about 4 cases of fistula. The majority were during birth, during deliverance that take longer time. That's when a mother does not deliver immediately. It is also common among young girls who give birth at 17 to 20 years old. And at times, we also receive raping cases where 5-year-old girls are raped and also brings fistula.
Dr. Steven Mauer, a reproductive health specialist with the UN Population Fund, says his agency has registered more than 60,000 fistula cases across the country, but it is more common among communities that practice early child marriages. He says fistula can disorganize one's normal menstruation cycle and may lead to infections that may cause infertility in the future. Dr. Mauer says fistula is repairable through surgery, but urges South Sudan communities to change their attitude toward child marriage in order to prevent the condition from happening in the first place.
If we don't address the root causes, we should not expect a reduction, because we are already talking about
more than 60,000 women living with this condition. We are trying to treat, but the rate of treatment is not commensurate with the rates of new cases happening. So even when we are reaching the ones who are already affected, there are more people who are getting the condition. So we need to make sure that we focus more on prevention, like ending child marriage.
And Dr. Mawa says more antenatal care attendants must be trained, as well as increasing the skills level of health professionals, so that when survivors visit a hospital, they can get medical support. He says UNFPA is working with other stakeholders to enact policies that regulate reproductive health care practices and rights in South Sudan.
The issue of family planning in terms of correct birth spacing, getting pregnant at the right time, not having too frequent deliveries, proper spacing, not having pregnancies that are too risky, like maybe at an older age where complications of fistula can come in.
Mawa says UNFPA provides contraceptives and maternal medicines to South Sudan hospitals. He urges parents to keep their daughters in school so that they can avoid early child marriage and early pregnancies, and urges communities to make sure that women deliver babies with the help of skilled birth attendants. The theme of this year's International Day to End Obstetric Fistula is Fistula is a Human Rights Violation. End it now. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Kelele by Hard Life Avenue Stars. Been listening to Hard Life Avenue Stars with the song Kelele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Try to keep things between me and you. Can in a life, but don't tell someone new. Kalangale gale me jaji bushem on you. Yamara keep secrets between me and you. Try to keep things between me and you. Can in a life, but don't tell someone new. Kalangale gale me jaji bushem on you. Yamara keep secrets between me and you. Yeah, yeah.